Okay. I'm going to give you a bit of an overview of some of the progress and also the future challenges to biofortification with iron and zinc mainly as the focus. In biofortification, the strategy is for the carotenoids, but I'll just focus on iron and zinc today. Let me just figure out how to work this. Okay, so I thought, wasn't sure whether everyone knew what biofortification was, but as I look across the audience, most people do. old faces in the biofortification game. So it's just a definition to develop micronutrient-dense staple crops using the best traditional plant breeding practices and modern biotechnology to achieve provitamin A, iron and zinc concentrations that can have measurable effects on nutritional status. And the emphasis here is on the underlying word, measurable effects. We don't just want to lift up the levels to a level that you can't measure the measurable effect in the human being, but we want to actually have an impact here. So we see it as an additional weapon to fight deficiency, along with supplementation, commercial fortification, and also dietary diversity, which is really the one of the most important things that we must consider and we must head for. This just jumped then, it wasn't supposed to. But anyway, so we want to move that, as you can see here, this bell-shaped curve, you want to move that across the line here of from iron deficiency through to iron sufficiency and move it most of the way across and to bring the people across the population distribution to give them higher hemoglobin content and improve nutritional status. Also, you can see that there is part of this bell-shaped curve will always remain within the deficiency range, so not all individuals will go into the iron-sufficient area. And the program actually targets the poor people, individuals that predominantly eat the staples. So, and here what we see here is a number I don't know if many know these people, but the guy in the blue top is Wolf Pfeiffer, who's now moved up from the head of plant breeding in Harvest Plus, take on a director's role. And just to his right is Kedar Rai, and he's a pearl millet breeder at Iquisat. And just this year he's released his first biofortified pearl millet variety. So the whole program is seen as quite a cost-effective program. It's a one-time investment in research that spans over three periods of time. It's around, in total, about 15 years from the initial phase of biofortification right through to the dissemination phase. And the whole strategy is to institutionalise the nutritional traits within the international and national breeding programs. This is just a bit of an idea of of all those various programs around the world in the CGIAR research centres, and you can see that there are a whole range of groups there that are involved in the biofortification process. So for biofortification to deliver on its promise, it must also answer yes to three major questions. And the first one, can breeding increase the nutrient levels enough to improve the human nutrition? Number two, will extra nutrients be bioavailable at sufficient levels to improve the micronutrient status? And three, will farmers adopt crops and will consumers buy and eat enough? These are the three major questions that Harvest Plus are continually focusing on and trying to answer some of these questions. So substantial progress has been made in the breeding and nutrition studies to answer some of these questions. I won't dwell on the nutrition side of things, But in the first phase of nutrition, we had the bioavailability, the consumption, also retention. And we're still doing a lot of that work even in the second phase now. And I'm doing retention studies, for example, for pearl millet and for the groups in Ikrasat. So it's a continual process. And also in the second phase, the efficacy and the effectiveness studies. Efficacy studies, there are a number of trials going on in Uganda, also in India and Pakistan, right as we speak. But I'll focus mainly on the plant breeding. So in the first phase, we looked at genetic variation for the traits in of interest. And in many cases, there was genetic variation, sufficient genetic variation there to be exploited. Looked at the nutrient and yield interaction, and there was no negative impact of on yield with a higher level of nutrition in the grains. There's been a lot of work on the transgenics, and I've got an example of that and some latest work that we've just completed and published. And also the high throughput screening, which really is important for the plant breeders if they're going to be able to do their job successfully, and it also helps in the institutionalising of the whole biofortification process. Some of the transgenic work, this is just being published in PLOS One. And so this gives you some sort of idea here. This is the iron concentration. This says content, but this is actually concentration. And you can see here on this x-axis. And you can see here these are the wild types, and as in the transgenic, in these transgenic lines, that you can really increase the iron concentration quite substantially. And at the same time, the nicotianamine level also went up with the overexpression of the nicotianamine synthase genes. In this case here, we have nicotianamine synthase 1, 2, and also 3. If we look at the levels of nutrition that we have in terms of iron concentration in the grain, the most promising here was the NAS2 line. Brown lot rice, we had 64 parts per million. And in the polished rice, we had 19 parts per million. What was also encouraging is that if you increase the iron concentration, you also increase the zinc concentration. Both went up hand in hand, which was very encouraging. And if we looked at some of the data also from the synchrotron, this is the wild type here on F. You don't have to worry too much about these over here. And this is just the cumulative picture for both for various elements, including iron, manganese, and zinc. And the interesting thing here is that blue, this extra blue, is all zinc. So lots of zinc was loaded up into the endosperm of the rice. And the iron, which is this green layer around here, was mostly in the subalurone layer. After a heavy polishing, it still remained in that subalurone layer. It didn't have the same effect as you see with the zinc. So this transgenic approach, you can see that there's a really good way of loading up more nutrient in the grain. It also shows the importance of nicotianamine in terms of that loading process. The other really important breakthrough that we've had, we've worked on for a number of years looking at trying to find a rapid screening technique for the plant breeders to screen their vast numbers of genotypes in the breeding process. So we've turned our attention from colorimetric techniques. Now we've gone through to this high throughput screening with XRF technology. And these units here, this one here, we've focused mainly on the Oxford Industries unit. It was really robust, and it's used mainly in mining and also on oil platforms. So it had to be quite robust, and it just sits on a bench top, very easy. And we can screen one genotype, one sample, in 60 seconds. And that's without any further manipulation in terms of grinding up your sample or anything like this. So it's very, very easy technology. And just to give you some sort of idea of what you see between the ICP concentration here and the XRF, this is for pearl millet. Also, we have the same effect, though, for wheat and also for rice. And you can see really good correlations there. R squared for zinc is around 0.93 in the validation set, and also about 0.94 for iron. And what we've found is that the technology is moving ahead so fast that we're getting, with the newer pieces of equipment that are coming out, the detection limits are so much better. And also I should say that we've gone one step further from there. I didn't put it up, but we've gone from that bench-top unit. We're now testing a handheld gun, which is really quite exciting. So we'll be able to go out into the field and just, you know, hopefully point and shoot. Big issue then we've got to get around is things like moisture content. I think that's really quite important. But hopefully we'll get around this quite soon and plant breeders will benefit. And this then opens up the issue, okay, we can do large-scale screening, but also for the marker work we can use a lot of this technology for mapping purposes. Now, at the moment we're looking at some association mapping with CIMMYT in Mexico, and I know that there's a number of populations at Erie in the Philippines that have been developed just for zinc that we can also access and look into. Another focus for us has been just getting this whole issue of contamination out of the picture. It's a real problem. And this just gives you some sort of idea. This is the Sataki dehuller. It has contamination coming from the rollers. And so Sataki here, it's mainly zinc. It's supposed to be around 21 parts per million, and we get 28. And then we've identified products that will not contaminate. And this is, we recoated these wheels, and we brought it back down to 21 parts per million. So we've done this for a number of pieces of equipment, and also we're now manipulating rice polishers, and again trying to service the plant breeders, so they can do their job more effectively and not waste their time on using technology that will lead to contamination and wrong results. In-country support for plant breeding and analysis is a high priority too. This is some work we did. This is, I don't know if you know this chap here, it's Ivan Ortiz Monasterio. Went up to, this is about 30 kilometres from the Afghan border up and past the Peshawar Valley. In Pakistan, we went up there and we helped. We showed the plant breeders how to sample their crops to look at nutrient status of their wheat. In this case here, it was really quite interesting. There was a lot of zinc deficiency in this region. So that was a really helpful exercise for the plant breeders because they can see firsthand how things are done. So in the second phase, and also ongoing, we're looking at marker-assisted selection. We want to head that way in terms of markers. It's very hard for wheat. In particular, and that's why there's a major focus on at the moment to look at markers in that area and QTL mapping. Also, we've been putting a lot of work into capacity building within the NAS, and the amount of money that's going into that will double next year. So we'll be buying 5 of those XRF units mostly for India. One for Congo. We've set up one in Rwanda. Also units in another one unit in India, and also Nigeria. So we see that we have needs to support the labs. We've done evaluations. We've run proficiency studies to try to identify their problems within their analytical procedures. And interesting, from the proficiency study side of things, majority of labs are not working properly. The analysis that is coming out is is really poor. And so they might have the nice equipment, but the results are just not adequate. And we also get into this area of release of the new varieties with our biofortified traits. So after 7 years of investments in breeding and nutrition studies, there are plans now to disseminate 4 nutrient-dense crops in 5 countries. That's the starting. That's just for starters. This gives you an idea of what's being released and also the release year. So zinc biofortified rice in 2013, Bangladesh and India. Wheat, 2013, India and Pakistan. And I was just talking to Wolf Pfeiffer the other day that they've got a really good lead on the wheat that's come out of Simet in Mexico. It's quite high levels of zinc, and that's being transferred into material that's going into India and Pakistan in the exchange of germplasm. Also, the iron and zinc biofortified pearl millet. Interestingly, pearl millet wasn't a high priority at the beginning, and it's just taken off. It's got very high levels. They found good genetic variation for the traits, and they're exploiting that. And also beans for Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Some of these the iron levels in beans are really quite high. So just finishing, ongoing challenges. This is straight from Howarth Boers, the director of Harvest Plus. He said that there are 4 major challenges that biofortification now faces. And for the donors, the priority is 1 and 2. So to scale up use of biofortified varieties in several countries and show measure impact, this is the ultimate proof of concept. And this is an ongoing process, something that can't happen quite quickly. 2 is to institutionalise the breeding for minerals and vitamins at ag research centres. 3, getting the public health community to recognise agriculture's key role in improving nutrition, and getting the public health community to fund certain types of ag investments, like biofortification, and influence agricultural policies. Also, 4, gaining a better understanding of human nutrition and what are the optimal breeding objectives, prebiotics, nutrient interactions, gut health, etc. That was cut away at the beginning of the Harvest Plus program. There was a lot of work on the prebiotics, and I was involved in that to a certain degree, and that was cut away. But now, talking to Howarth Boers, he'd like to revisit that, but needs the donor money to get that kick-started. And so I think that's what we're seeing, though, is a lot of progress within the whole biofortification strategy. It's really quite exciting. The donors are really excited about the release of the new varieties that are coming out over the next couple of years. So they're meeting their targets. And so it appears to have quite a good future in terms of, you know, momentum and support. Okay, I'll leave it there. Thanks. Yes.
What are the yields like for these biofortified releases? How close are they to the current yields? And is there a minimum target where you won't release before you reach a certain yield?
Yeah, all the material that's being released, there's no yield penalty at all. It's very important that the strategy is to always have comparable or higher yield. Otherwise, it just won't be accepted by the farmers. Yeah, no one's looked at as far as I know, there's no one's looked at that. We don't see a relationship in terms of uptake of zinc at the root level and loading into the grain. It seems like they are different, those processes. So, you know, on a high cadmium soil, if you've got a high uptake at the root level, not necessarily going to equate to a high level of cadmium uptake into the grains.
So with your XRF machines, can you also, can they be used for cadmium too? Of course, we're going to begin with lower levels there.
Yes, that's true. We haven't looked at cadmium, but I can't see why it couldn't be used for that. It has a problem with some of those lower levels, the lighter elements, and also lower levels. So what was quite nice is it's also in Mexico there's a real focus on biofortifying wheat with selenium. And they're using that to biofortify crop as making more money, really. They're selling it into Europe. And we found that when we took set up the new unit at Simmet, we tested it and it picked up the selenium really well. So that was, you just have to tweak it a little bit and look at the calibrating the instrument quite well, and away you go. It's very easy, technology. And I've just done a valuation on another piece of XRF equipment. It's the Pico Fox. I don't know if you've heard of that, by Bruker. It's just come out. It's a little box, and it's a similar price as an ICP at the moment, but I'm sure that will go down over time. But there you just spot it onto a little disc, your sample, even the 1 grain. It will pick it up. I was very skeptical to start with, and we gave them a lot of blind samples and said, okay, take away and we'll see how, and then come back with a report. They came back and it looked really good, really promising.
So on the XRF, you are doing whole seeds, or are you grinding up
the whole seeds, and then we can use those seeds later. That's the other thing. That's very nice for plant breeders. Because there's no digestion step. We do get we get less noise if we grind up the sample and we press it, which is a traditional way of doing it, but we want it a bit fast and furious, really, for the plant breeders.
Validating your curves for that? I mean, does it only work for do you have to take a certain amount of germplasm and validate, and then, just related lines to those? I mean, can you do a diversity study with this? Will the validation work?
Yeah, it does. So that you're saying, is there a matrix effect, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't see that so much. What we do see, we've gone to beans, and once you get up to the geometry is important, seed geometry. So when we get to a stage like something like maize, that's really borderline, then you'll have to start grinding your sample first. Because the X-rays aren't penetrating deep enough through the sample. But for rice and wheat, or pearl millet, very small seeds, we don't see a problem at all.
What's the cost of that machine, the XRF?
The XRF, it's around the 70 mark. But we've bought so many units so far, and we've done a deal. We're down to low 60s, and because we're buying 5 next year, I'm hoping that the price will go down even further. So it depends on numbers, the number of units that you buy.
What's the depth of the analysis and the line you're using?
Well, the ICP can do those lighter elements. You won't get sodium, you won't get boron, for example, with the XRF. They're just too light. But the heavy elements, it should be able to do it. And actually, the Pico Fox was really impressive. The table they gave us, some of those elements I had to go back to the periodic table to see where are they. Yeah. I was really quite interested because, things like xylem, exudate, and I haven't put phloem yet, but I'm keen to put phloem in there and see what happens. But we're using ICP mass spec for phloem. That's good. there?